on each other. He rinsed blood out of the towel and hung it up on the rack. So what do we do now? The same thing as before, but smarter. How so? I have ideas. Marco unbuttoned his shirt and eyed his reflection in the mirror. Pinkish bruises swelled on his chest and abdomen. But how's the bike?
Chapter 54. Elisabetta, March 1940. Elisabetta hovered outside Nonna's bedroom while Dr. Pastore finished his examination, as Nonna's bronchitis had worsened. Elisabetta felt on edge, worrying about Nonna, and she remembered Dr. Pastore from the day that her father had died. Dr. Pastore hadn't mentioned it, and she tried to dismiss thoughts of that awful morning now. Dr. Pastore had grown balder, wider, and more standoffish since then, though he came whenever Nonna needed him, even in the evening, as she was so well regarded in the neighborhood. Giuseppina, good night. Dr. Pastore stood in the threshold of Nonna's bedroom, holding his worn black bag. Get some sleep. Then why keep me awake? Nonna called back, and Dr. Pastore left the bedroom, closing the door behind him. How is she? Elisabetta asked, holding her breath. Her usual difficult self. Dr. Pastore crossed to the front door, and Elisabetta dogged his steps, feeling defensive for Nonna. She doesn't like being sick. She knows the restaurant needs her. She feels her responsibilities acutely. She's been sick for a while. She'll be fine in time. She needs to rest and continue her medication. Why isn't she getting better? What's the matter with her? This has been going on for months. She has pneumonia now. Oh, no. Is pneumonia better or worse than bronchitis? It means she has mucus in her lungs. Dr. Pastore opened the front door, but Elisabetta stopped him, grabbing the sleeve of his suit jacket. I'm worried. When I came home from work, she was lethargic. That's not like her. She wasn't lethargic just now, Dr. Pastore said matter-of-factly. Because she perks up for you and her son. Sometimes Elisabetta thought she was the only person who truly understood Nonna. I see her day to day. I'm worried she's hiding how bad she's feeling. She's not a young woman. Nonna called out, Elisabetta, will you please quiet down? I'm sick, not deaf. Dr. Pastore rolled his eyes. See? Not lethargic. The medication takes time. I really must leave. Goodbye.
I'll call you if she worsens.
Yes. Dr. Pastore turned away, trundling off down the street.
Good night.
Elisabetta was just about to close the door when she spotted Marco coming toward her in a nice jacket and slacks. They were supposed to go out for a drink tonight, but she had forgotten after she'd come home and found Nonna sicker.
Buonasera, Elisabetta.
Marco kissed her quickly on the lips, smelling of a spicy aftershave she had come to favor, but not tonight.
Oh, Marco, I'm sorry. I can't go out.
Why not? Marco's face fell. It's a beautiful night.
Nonna has pneumonia, and the doctor just left. She needs to rest. I should stay home.
Okay, then. Why don't I come in and visit? We don't have to go out.
No, that won't work. We'll disturb her, and she needs to rest.
Why don't we take a quick walk?
Marco touched her arm gently.
No, I don't want to leave her alone.
We won't be long, just around the block.
Nonna yelled from the bedroom.
Leave or stay, but kindly let me sleep, will you?
Marco smiled, taking Elisabetta's hand. Come on, cara.
Okay.
Elisabetta let herself be led out of the house, closing the front door behind her. Via Fiorata was one of the most charming little streets in Trastevere, with two-story houses with facades of peach, pink, and mint green. Flower boxes were stuffed with daisies and ivy that cascaded down. The air smelled fresh and the night sky was starry, but Elisabetta was preoccupied with pneumonia.
So, how have you been?
Marco gave her hand a kiss.
Busy with Nonna.
You know, she's not your responsibility.
Elisabetta looked over, surprised.
I love her, Marco.
I understand, but she's still not your responsibility. She has Paolo.
But I live with her.
I know, but you can't live for her.
I don't.
Elisabetta shot back, defensive.
Don't you?
Marco squeezed her hand.
We could go out a lot more, but you always want to stay home and take care of her.
Elisabetta knew he was right, but it bothered her.
I have obligations you don't have.
You also have my ring. I wish you would wear it.
Marco lifted her hand, eyeing her bare fingers.
It would look so pretty on your hand.
Elisabetta had no immediate reply. She kept the ring in her jewelry box and tried it on from time to time, but she never kept it on long.
So what do you think about getting married? Do you feel ready yet?
Not really. I'm sorry,
Elisabetta forced herself to say.
Why not?
For the same reason that I can't go out as much. I have so many responsibilities. It's just a hard time for me.
Marco stopped, looking at her with those dark eyes and a soft expression.
That's what I'm for, to make those hard times easier. I want to do that for you, for the rest of your life. You work so hard, and I want to lighten your load.
Elisabetta felt touched, but she couldn't ignore her feelings.
I appreciate that, but I need to take care of my business on my own.
We don't have forever. War seems a certainty now.
Marco frowned. With so much disruption, wouldn't it be good to have something we can count on? You and me, as man and wife, living in our own place.
But I can't move out on Nonna. She has no one but me.
Again, Paolo should do more. You're not family.
Elisabetta felt stung, unaccountably.
I feel like I'm her family.
You're not. Blood is blood.
Paolo has a wife and family, so he's busier than I am. Nonna's on her own, Marco. I live with her, and I can't turn my back on her. I won't.
Okay. Marco took her arm. But I still don't see why you won't wear my ring.
Elisabetta swallowed hard.
I don't feel ready to say yes yet.
Marco sighed, pained.
Is it Sandro?
No,
Elisabetta answered, but she wasn't exactly sure.
It's things I have to take care of and do before I get married.
Like what?
Like become a journalist or a novelist?
But you're not writing anything, are you?
Not now, only because I've been so busy. My responsibilities come before the things I want for myself, and marriage too. Can't you understand that?
No, I can't,
Marco answered, gentle but persistent.
I can support you, and you won't have to work so hard.
but these are my obligations. My life. Elisabetta meant what she said, but she also hurt to see the disappointment flickering across his handsome face. Do you want your ring back?
No, of course not. Keep the ring, Cara.
Marco opened his arms, enveloped her in an embrace, and kissed her forehead.
I'll be more patient.
Thank you.
Elisabetta nestled against his chest.
Please try to understand.
I will, Marco said with a resigned sigh.
Chapter 55. Marco, April 1940. Marco hurried down the crowded sidewalk to the Piazza Venezia, his heart thundering with anticipation. He had been summoned to see Commendatore Buonaccorso, who had been promoted to working for the Partito Nazionale Fascista, the National Fascist Party. The Commendatore's office was now in Palazzo Venezia, which was the very seat of fascist power, located in the heart of Rome. Il Duce himself had his office there and delivered his speeches from its iconic balcony. Scores of fascist officers in black uniforms hurried in and out of Palazzo Venezia, climbing into waiting cars or hustling off in groups. There was a stronger military presence in the capital and an undercurrent of urgency now that war loomed larger. Palazzo Venezia had become the most important building in all of Italy, and Marco couldn't wait to see inside. It had been built in the 1400s and was medieval in aspect, with a crenellated roof line like a castle and its turret soaring into the blue sky. Armed guards flanked the entrance, their demeanor exemplifying military professionalism, unlike the jovial guards back at Palazzo Braschi. Marco saluted them crisply. They saluted him back, and he was shown into a security office where he identified himself. Fascist officers hurried to and fro, their expressions grave and conversations conducted in low tones. There was no talking, laughing, or joking around, also unlike Palazzo Braschi. Marco was ushered into the Hall of Feats of Hercules, a magnificent vaulted hallway of marble, covered with painted friezes of Hercules fighting lions, oxen, dragons, deer, and a centaur. He gazed at the grand murals in awe, realizing that he stood within shouting distance of Mussolini's office, the Sala del Mappamondo. Il Duce worked famously hard, so the lights remained on until late at night, though some gossiped it was for show. Il Duce also had a private bedroom attached to his office, where it was rumored that he would bed his mistress and other women. Marco strained to hear Il Duce's voice, perhaps in conversation or on the telephone, but the hallway was quiet. He didn't know if he believed the gossip, as some were jealous of Il Duce and everyone had stories about him. Marco felt a personal connection to Il Duce since he had shaken his hand. Of course, Marco loathed the anti-Semitic race laws, but perhaps if he worked here, he could maneuver himself into a position to change them. Commendatore Buonaccorso's new office was grander and more elegantly appointed than his old one, with a polished parquet floor, oil paintings, marble statues, and a crystal chandelier. His desk was larger and fancier, ornately carved, and Buonaccorso looked more powerful merely because he stood behind it. Otherwise, his appearance hadn't changed, and he still sported his trimmed and oiled mustache, his neatly pressed dark uniform, and his shiny tall boots. Buonaccorso remained standing, unsmiling, his expression formal. He gestured to the chair opposite his desk. Marco, sit down. Marco obeyed. You know I think highly of you. I look out for you. Thank you, sir. Marco had been expecting a promotion, but he was getting the impression he had been wrong. Your fortunes have been up and down with the party, have they not?
Yes, sir.
I was very proud of you the night of Il Duce's speech, when you leapt so quickly to corrective action. You turned an embarrassment into a victory for the fascio. Buonaccorso met his eye, newly stern. However, it has come to my attention that you had a recent encounter with Ovra. You have been fraternizing with Jews, rendering them aid and assistance. Marco stiffened. Carmine and Stefano must have reported his midnight runs to Buonaccorso. Marco, those who fraternize with Jews can be expelled from the party. You must know this. Hundreds have already been expelled. Pietisti are no longer tolerated. That applies to you. Marco's heart sank. Pietisti were those who were compassionate toward Jews. I stood up for you with respect to your brother Aldo. I cannot do so again if you continue to fraternize with Jews. But these are the Simones. They are close friends of my family. You know Massimo. His son Sandro is my best. Basta! Buonaccorso raised a hand. I don't want to know such things, do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Buonaccorso frowned. I called you here to help you. I think you show great promise. I have groomed you to take your place in our party. It hasn't been easy, given your brother's treachery. I placed my own reputation on the line for you. It's time for you to grow up, son. Marco swallowed hard. When we get older, we leave our childhood behind. Classmates must be cut loose. These are only historic relationships, and they must go. You cannot live in the past and still have a future. Do you follow?
Yes, Marco answered, but he wasn't sure he agreed.
Marco, I know you well. Buonaccorso narrowed his eyes. I can tell you disagree with me. You follow your heart and not your head. Wise up. Don't be a testardo. If there is another such report from Ovra, you will be expelled from our party. Your father, too. Where would your family be then? If the Terrizzis are no longer in good standing, we'll find another bar. You can lose Bar Girosport.
Marco blinked, shaken. It was true, if disturbing.
Now you're listening. Buonaccorso smiled tightly. Do as I say. Trust my judgment. I have plans for you here. I am planning to offer you a position in the eventuality that Italy enters the war.
War.
The word echoed with gravity, especially in these halls. The stakes are higher for you now. In time of war, the decisions that one makes are crucial. That's true on the front lines and on the home front. From now on, if you help the Simone family, you risk your own.
Marco's gut wrenched.
It comes down to you or them, Marco.
Choose wisely.
Chapter 56. Sandro, May 1940. Sandro had no idea why Marco wanted to meet at the Spanish Steps, which was mobbed with students and bohemians on this temperate night. He searched for his best friend among the throng, talking, drinking, smoking, singing, kissing, playing guitars, and posing for pictures in front of the Chiesa della Trinità dei Monti, the church at the top of the stairs, its alabaster facade and twin spires lit up. No Marco. Sandro made his way down to the landing, which was packed with people sitting hip to hip. No Marco. Sandro began to descend the 100 or so steps, picking his way through. Still, no Marco. Finally, Sandro spotted his best friend against the side wall, sitting among a group of Dutch tourists wearing bright orange hats. Marco had on an orange hat, too, blending in with the Dutch. Sandro assumed Marco was playing a joke, as he made his way over and squeezed in beside him.
Marco, why the hat?
It's new. Marco produced another orange hat and plopped it on Sandro's head. Here's one for you, too.
Are you kidding? I don't need a hat. Keep it on. It looks good on you. Watch out, ladies. Sandro laughed. What's going on? Why are we meeting here, of all places? It's so noisy I can barely hear you. Were you in the neighborhood? No. Marco glanced over his shoulder. Then why? To see how you are, since the last time we got together. I'm fine, I guess, Sandro answered, mystified. Rosa came home, and she's helping out. That's good. How are your parents? My father sends his regards. Things grow worse, but we cope. And Anna? Who? Anna, the girl you like. Sandro had forgotten about his fictional girlfriend. Oh, Anna's fine. Are you in love? Almost. A man can't almost be in love. Marco laughed. Either he loves, or he does not. Sandro needed to change the subject. How have you been? Fine. I might get a job at Palazzo Venezia. My boss got a promotion, and he's trying to bring me over. Davvero? Sandro managed to say, refraining from speaking further on the subject. Good for you. Thanks, but I know how you feel. Marco's expression turned serious under his silly orange cap. I'm hoping one day I can be in a position to fight these horrible race laws. I hope so too, Sandro said, though he couldn't imagine Marco ever having such power. Things are tense at work, and I've come around to your view on the war. I was wrong before. I think we're going to enter. I agree. Sandro feared that if war came to Italy, things would get worse for the Jews, though he didn't know how that was even possible. Everyone in the ghetto was out of work, food was growing scarce, and every day seemed to bring another new race law. Don't worry, I'll keep you posted. I'll let you know as soon as I know anything. Marco brightened. Guess what? I proposed to Elisabetta. Congratulations. Sandro patted Marco on the back, masking his anguish. He hadn't guessed Marco would propose so quickly, but he should have. He would love Elisabetta forever. But he had done the right thing in sending her away. He couldn't offer her anything, and Marco could offer her everything. She would be safe and happy if she married Marco. Marco pursed his lips. The only thing is, she didn't say yes, but she didn't say no. She said she needs time to think it over. So give her time. Sandro wondered if Elisabetta's decision had anything to do with him. On the one hand, he hoped it didn't. On the other, he hoped it did. I'm going to, but I don't see what difference time makes. Marco rolled his eyes. We should get married without delay. I love her, and she loves me. She does everything on her own, like always. I feel bad for her, and now she has to take care of Nonna, who's sick. What's the rush? I would rather be happy sooner, wouldn't you? I love and adore her, and I have needs. Marco snorted in frustration. Rome is full of beautiful girls, yet I wait for Elisabetta. My brother took a vow of chastity, but I didn't. Just be patient. Sandro couldn't bear the thought of Elisabetta in bed with Marco. He shooed it from his mind. And she's talking about wanting to be a writer or something. She wants to be a novelist. Sandro flashed on the time after the Deledda lecture, when he and Elisabetta had sat outside talking. Now it seemed like a magical night from another time. Am I supposed to wait for her to finish her novel? One that she hasn't even started? It sounds as if she's too busy to write, with Nonna sick. If she wanted to write, she would write. Sandro felt a pang, for Marco and for Elisabetta. He loved them both, and he wanted Elisabetta to be happy and safe. It struck him that Marco could make her safe, but he himself could make her happy. Suddenly, he got an idea. You want my advice? Marco smiled crookedly. You give me advice about women? Sandro bit his tongue. He would never tell Marco that Elisabetta had chosen him. Rather, for what it's worth, encourage her writing. How? Her birthday's next month. Buy her a fancy notebook. How's that going to make her marry me? It's not. Then why do it? It will make her start writing, and she'll be happier. Isn't that what you want? But I can make her happy. All she has to do is say yes. Writing will make her happy. And maybe if she's happy, she'll come around sooner. I should go. Abruptly, Marco glanced over his shoulder. When I get up, I want you to take my rucksack. Why? It's for your family. What's inside? Marco pushed his rucksack over with his foot. Groceries and things. Sandro felt torn. His family needed the groceries, but he didn't want to accept charity. No, thanks. My family is my responsibility. Please take it, Sandro. My father will kill me if I come home with that rucksack. Tell him I insisted then. We have money, and we barter. Everybody does. One of my father's clients leaves us groceries in return for legal help. Marco pursed his lips, and Sandro read his expression, since Marco could never hide his emotions. Marco, are you the one who leaves the food at our door? And the money? Yes, but don't make it a big deal. Sandro felt grateful, but ashamed to need the help. Why didn't you tell me? You wouldn't have taken it. Marco looked over his shoulder again, and Sandro realized what was going on. They know you're helping us, don't they? They've been watching you, haven't they? We're meeting at the Spanish Steps, where we never go, wearing these hats. I can't let you do this. Sandro took off the hat and pushed the rucksack back to Marco. Take the bag, please. No, thanks. On our friendship. Marco rose. Please, I have to leave. I can't argue about it any longer. Sandro relented with a sigh. Okay. Thank you. Good. My bike's around the corner, and I don't think I was followed. Nevertheless, wait 5 minutes, then go. Goodbye, Marco. Stay safe. Sandro watched Marco thread his way through the students, slip his orange hat into his back pocket, and vanish into the crowd. Sandro heaved a deep sigh. He despaired that things had come to this, with his family struggling, and Marco risking so much to help. It wasn't the life he had foreseen for himself, Marco, or Elisabetta. He prayed that they would survive whatever the future held in store. It terrified him to think that the three of them were sliding toward war, into the gaping maw of a monster that could swallow them whole, like Jonah into the whale. Sandro picked up the rucksack and left, heartsick.
Chapter 57. Elisabetta. 9th of June, 1940. Elisabetta awoke to the sound of Nonna's coughing downstairs, and she lay in bed waiting for it to stop. The older woman's health had been up and down, but Dr. Pastore had said that the warm weather would do her good. Elisabetta took off her sheet, about to get out of bed until she remembered that today was her birthday. She put her sheet back on and gave herself a moment to rest. Sunlight brightened her bedroom, and her gaze fell on her father's watercolors of Trastevere, which hung on the wall opposite her bed. She couldn't feel completely happy on her birthday without him. He had always made a fuss on the day, though he hadn't had money for gifts. He made her feel special, and she mourned him still. Sandro popped into her mind, as always, but she pressed that thought away. There was no point in thinking about him if he didn't want her. Marco was taking her out to dinner tonight, and though she looked forward to it, she knew he would ask about the ring again. She loved him but dreaded the pressure, for she couldn't give him the answer he wanted yet. Rico picked his way to her, purring, and she stroked his back, feeling the vertebrae underneath.
He was thin, but he wore it well, as he had the excellent self-esteem of every feline.
Elisabetta,
Nonna called from downstairs, and she threw off her sheet in alarm.
Be right down.
Elisabetta jumped out of bed, slipped into her bathrobe, and hustled downstairs with Rico at her heels. She hurried to Nonna's bedroom and opened the door to find Nonna, propped up on her pillows, holding a tiny white kitten in her lap.
Happy birthday. Oh, my,
Elisabetta gasped, instantly charmed.
A kitten. Thank you. Isn't she pretty?
Nonna stroked the kitten, which had a perfect triangle of a face, with round eyes as blue as the sea, a spongy pink nose, and wispy white ears.
She is.
Elisabetta sat on the bed and petted the kitten, who purred immediately, a gratifying sound.
Where did you get her?
Teresa's cat had kittens, and they needed homes. Teresa brought her by earlier this morning.
But you're not supposed to get out of bed. What if you fell?
You think I can't walk?
Nonna picked up the droopy kitten and placed her on Elisabetta's lap, and Rico looked up from the doorway, his tail curling into a question mark.
Oh, no. I wonder what Rico will think.
I already told him. He has to get used to her the way I got used to him. Old cats like us can change our ways.
Nonna chuckled, but it turned into a cough.
Are you okay?
Yes, and I feel good today. What do you want to name your kitten?
I don't know.
She's as white as flour and chubby as a dumpling. So how about gnocchi?
Perfect.
Elisabetta laughed.
I know you'll take wonderful care of her, because you take wonderful care of me.
Thank you, Nonna.
Elisabetta kissed her on the cheek.
I love you.
I love you too. Happy birthday. And don't tell me you're going out with Marco to celebrate.
Nonna wagged an arthritic index finger at her.
If you keep this up, he's going to ask you to marry him.
Elisabetta felt a guilty twinge. She hadn't told Nonna about Marco's proposal, since she hadn't decided what to do.
Then I'll tell him I need time to think about it.
Oh, good idea. Italian men love waiting.
Nonna snorted.
By the way, he left you a gift this morning. I saw it when I got the kitten from Teresa.
Marco, a gift?
Yes. He's trying very hard, isn't he?
Nonna turned to her night table, picked up a gift wrapped in silver paper, and handed it over. Elisabetta read the card on top, recognizing Marco's oversized and sloppy handwriting, with some letters facing the wrong way.
Elisabetta, happy birthday. Begin a great novel today.
I love you.
Marco.
Elisabetta felt a wave of love for him, appreciating that he was trying to encourage her writing. She tore off the wrapping paper, and the gift was a notebook with lined pages and a painted sunflower on the cover.
Isn't that so sweet?
Why is his handwriting so bad? Is he dumb?
No,
Elisabetta answered, defensive.
He's very smart.
Then why can't he write? His letters look like a child's.
Boys never have good handwriting.
Elisabetta held the notebook to her chest, and Rico leapt to the bed. She watched to see how Rico would receive the newcomer, and so did Nonna. Gnocchi took the initiative, walking to Rico, and Rico purred loudly.
Look, he likes her.
I told you, he obeys me.
Elisabetta arrived home after work, having floated through her birthday on a cloud. Paolo, his wife Sofia, and the busboys had bought her a cake, and her regulars had tipped generously for the occasion. It had been a wonderful day, and was going to be a wonderful night. Marco had been on her mind, and she couldn't wait to see him. She went to check on Nonna, but the older woman was asleep. Rico and Gnocchi were curled up together at the foot of her bed, so Elisabetta ran upstairs to get ready. She unbuttoned her work dress on the fly and slipped into her beautiful pink party dress, since they were going to a fancy restaurant. She jumped into her nice shoes, hurried to her bureau, and put on some new perfume, a freesia scent. She glanced in the mirror, loving the way the dress looked and grateful that Marco had bought it for her. She paused, opened her jewelry box, and fished out the engagement ring. She slipped the diamond on her finger and turned her hand this way and that, watching the facets catch the light. It was lovely, and even more than the ring, she felt moved by Marco leaving her the notebook this morning. That simple act showed her that he truly understood her. Elisabetta made a decision. She picked up her purse and slipped the ring inside, just as she heard knocking downstairs on the front door. She flew from the bedroom and downstairs, hurried through the living room, and opened the door to find Marco in his uniform, smiling and holding a single red rose.
"Happy birthday, cara."
Marco presented her with the rose.
"Thank you. It's lovely."
"As are you."
Marco kissed her on both cheeks, then embraced her, and Elisabetta loved the warm sensation of being in his arms again, breathing in the smell of his familiar aftershave.
"Thank you for the notebook, too. That was very sweet of you."
"Oh, you're welcome. There will be another gift with dessert, too. Shall we go?"
"Yes,"
Elisabetta answered, setting her rose down, and they left together, walking hand in hand. She felt so happy, and Via Fiorata had never looked prettier, with jasmine, pink and white oleander, and red geraniums blooming in window boxes. The air was refreshing, and the late day sun bronzed the small houses of mint green and melon stucco. On impulse, Elisabetta stopped under a fragrant bower of wisteria at the end of the street.
"Marco, I have something to say."
"What?"
Marco turned to her with a smile.
"I love you, and I'm ready to get married."
Elisabetta heard the words coming out of her mouth, and they sounded exactly right. She dipped her hand into her purse, withdrew the ring, and handed it to him.
"Will you put this on my finger?"
"Of course."
Marco's dark eyes filmed, and he broke into a huge grin. He accepted the ring and slid it onto her finger.
"Elisabetta, will you marry me?"
"Yes, I will."
Elisabetta laughed, giddy, and Marco embraced her and kissed her gently.
"Now we can celebrate your birthday and our engagement. I'm so happy."
"Me too."
Elisabetta slid her hand around Marco's back, and he slid his around hers as they resumed walking.
"Hold up the ring. Let me see it."
Elisabetta extended her hand, wiggling her finger, and the little diamond twinkled in the sunshine.
"It looks like a star, doesn't it?"
"It does."
Suddenly, their attention was drawn by an older, ginger-haired man weaving toward them. She recognized him as one of her father's old drinking buddies, who had been at his funeral. He was obviously inebriated, and his unfocused gaze kept shifting from her to Marco and back again. He was poorly dressed, with coarse features and a nose marked by broken capillaries.
"You."
The ginger pointed at Elisabetta, his brow furrowing.
You're Lodovico d'Orfeo's daughter, aren't you? You look like him.
Why, yes, Elisabetta answered, surprised. She had no idea why the ginger seemed angry at her. Sir, I'm sorry. I don't recall your name.
But I know yours. Your father called you Betta. Look at you now.
The ginger scowled.
If your father were alive, he would be ashamed of you.
What? Excuse me, sir. Who are you?
Marco frowned.
Don't talk to her that way, friend.
The ginger snorted.
I'm not your friend. I don't want you to know me, and I don't want to know you. I know all I need to know by your uniform.
Then you should call me brother, if you're loyal to Italy and Il Duce.
Those are two very different matters. Dare I say more? Will you beat me? Lodovico hated your ilk for what you've done to our country.
The ginger turned to Elisabetta, his eyes blazing with drunken intensity.
The fascists beat your father without mercy. They stomped on his hands. They broke all his fingers. Yet today you're with a filthy black shirt.
Elisabetta recoiled, appalled.
No. No, that's not right. That's not how he broke his hands. He was in a bicycle accident.
Yes, it is. I knew him then. The fascists did it. But he didn't want you to know. He didn't want you in danger from those thugs. Now you're in bed with one.
Elisabetta gasped. Marco stepped to the ginger.
Sir, move along, and I'll forget you insulted my fiancé. Fiancé?
The ginger turned to Elisabetta and sneered.
You're marrying a thug. You dishonor Lodovico. You disgrace him.
No, no.
Elisabetta felt shaken at the very thought.
I honor my father's memory. You're just wrong. Why would fascists break his hands? He had nothing to do with fascists. He was a peaceful man, a painter.
And you're a whore, sir.
Marco interjected, cocking his fist.
Don't make me.
The ginger cursed, then staggered off. Elisabetta felt shaken, jarred by a sudden snippet of memory. She remembered one of the times her father had tried to quit drinking. He had experienced delirium tremens, shaking uncontrollably, terrified that fascists were coming to beat him. She had feared he was losing his sanity and dismissed it as delusion. But maybe it hadn't been. Marco smoothed her hair into place.
I'm sorry about that idiot. He's just drunk, telling stories.
But I just remembered something strange,
Elisabetta said, then told Marco the story. She had told Sandro the same thing after she had left the Deledda lecture in tears. Maybe there was a reason that the memory stuck with her. Maybe it was the truth, refusing to hide.
It was undoubtedly a hallucination. It doesn't mean anything.
Marco took her hand and they resumed walking.
Let's not let this ruin our celebration.
It's strange, though. My father's fingers, they went in different directions. He always said they healed poorly or the joints locked or something. I asked when I was little.
Elisabetta could picture her father's hands in detail. Even as misshapen as they had been, his fingers had been long, an artist's hands.
He said it was because of the way he fell off the bicycle. But it could have been caused by someone stomping on his hand. Come to think of it, it makes more sense.
Why would a fascist stomp on his hands? For no reason.
I don't know. But what if it's true?
Elisabetta felt lost and bewildered. She had thought that the only secret her parents had kept from her was her mother's affair. This felt like another shock. She couldn't dismiss it so easily.
It doesn't ring true to me.
Marco blinked as they walked along.
Your father wasn't political.
But he didn't like Mussolini.
I admit, the party used to have a thuggish element, but that doesn't mean they beat people willy-nilly.
But those injuries ruined him. It was when he started drinking. He couldn't paint again. He lost himself. He couldn't support us anymore. It was why my mother worked, even why their marriage fell apart.
Marriages fall apart for many reasons. Ours won't.
Marco smiled as they reached the restaurant. Here we are. Let's celebrate. Elisabetta remained preoccupied, and Marco found them a table by the window. Her mind couldn't stop racing, even as he ordered them spumante, then talked through dinner, regaling her with his typically funny stories about work. She watched his lips moving but heard nothing. All of her father's rants about Mussolini began to make more sense, and she was viewing them in a different light. Marco kept talking, but her gaze shifted from his handsome face to the utter blackness of his uniform. All she could think of was death. She knew that the fascists had risen to power via violence. She couldn't help but wonder if her father had been one of their victims, his elegant hands broken beneath the boots of a black shirt. Like Marco.
Elisabetta, are you okay? You haven't eaten much.
I'm not hungry.
Elisabetta forced a smile.
Your ring looks so pretty.
Thank you.
Elisabetta glanced at the diamond, which seemed to have lost its brilliance.
You're not saying much.
I'm tired, I guess. I had a busy day at work.
Marco nodded.
So did I. And I didn't get any sleep last night.
Why not?
Elisabetta asked, trying to rally.
The boss had an early meeting out of town. I had to pick him up at 4:30 in the morning to get him there in time.
Elisabetta didn't understand.
You picked him up at 4:30? Then when did you leave me the notebook?
Marco blinked.
What do you mean?
The notebook you left on my doorstep. For my birthday. When did you drop it off, if you had to pick up your boss so early?
Marco's smile faded. Elisabetta didn't understand what was going on. Marco pursed his lips, his regret plain.
Okay, I admit it. I didn't give you the notebook.
What?
Elisabetta asked, blindsided.
I thought the notebook was from you. You said it was.
Does it matter?
Of course. I feel disappointed. I trust you. I always have. You mean you lied to me?
I'm sorry.
Marco frowned, newly impatient.
I didn't know what to say, and I was on the spot. You were so happy, and I didn't want to admit it wasn't from me.
But that's wrong.
Elisabetta didn't know what to say. She had given Marco credit for the notebook. She had thought it showed that he understood her. It had been the thing that had made her decide to wear his diamond ring. But the truth was, he hadn't given her the notebook at all. He had lied.
It's just a notebook.
No, it's more than that. It's you and me.
Elisabetta struggled to think through her emotions.
I'm sick of lies, Marco. My mother lied to me. My father lied to me, if that ginger man is right. And now, you too. You...
I did it to make you happy.
How? Why? Lies don't make me happy.
Elisabetta spoke from the heart.
Not anymore.
Then I'm sorry I lied.
That doesn't erase it.
Elisabetta realized then who must have left the notebook. There was only one other person who could forge Marco's handwriting and who knew it was her birthday. She began to pull off her diamond ring.
What are you doing?
I'm sorry.
Elisabetta set the ring on the table.
I can't marry you. I don't feel sure anymore.
Over a stupid notebook.
Marco's eyes flashed with anger. I love you, and you love me.
I told you, it's more than the notebook.
Is it because I'm a fascist? You knew I was a fascist before.
But I didn't know you would lie to me.
Fine. You don't want to marry me?
Marco snatched the ring off the table and put it in his pocket. After I waited for you all this time, after I was faithful.
Marco,
do you know how much I adore you? And this is how you treat me?
Marco grabbed his water glass and hurled it at the wall, where it shattered. Water splashed, shards flew. Elisabetta jumped up. The other diners gasped, shocked. The waiter and the manager started running over. Marco stormed to the door, flung it open, and slammed it behind him.
Chapter 58. Sandro. 9th of June, 1940. There was a knock at the door, and Sandro looked up from the papers he was grading at the table. They had finished dinner, and Rosa and his mother were washing dishes, and his father was making notes in his thick folder. I'll get it. Sandro rose and answered the door, shocked to find Elisabetta in the threshold. Her eyes were red as if she'd been crying, but she was more beautiful than ever in a pink dress. He could barely stand this close to her without taking her in his arms. Sandro, may I speak with you in private?
I'll be right back,
Sandro called over his shoulder. Then he shut the door behind them, trying to get his bearings. Sorry, it's hard to find any privacy around here. Maybe away from the door? They'll hear everything. Outside? Worse. Let's go down to the landing. Elisabetta descended the stairs, trailing a beautiful fragrance, and Sandro followed her, his heart aching. It killed him to see her again, and the emotions he had been suppressing for so long rushed back to him. They reached the landing, and she turned around, linking her hands in front of her formally, as if she had something to say. Sandro, did you leave a notebook on my step this morning for my birthday? Did you forge a card to make me think Marco had written it? Sandro felt stricken. Elisabetta was right, and he didn't know what to say. He never thought she would figure it out. He had gotten her the notebook, knowing that Marco probably wouldn't. He had only wanted to make Marco look good to her. Sandro, please answer. He loves you, Elisabetta. Marry him. I'm not. I broke up with him tonight. Sandro groaned, anguished. I told you, I don't love you anymore. I don't believe you. Elisabetta shot back, then pressed herself against him and kissed him on the lips. Sandro kissed her back, feeling all the love in his broken heart. What the hell? Marco appeared at the lower landing, his face red with outrage. You're seeing each other behind my back? Sandro sprang away from Elisabetta. Marco! Elisabetta shook her head. Marco, listen. No! Marco's agonized gaze filmed with tears. Sandro, you did it on purpose. You left the notebook without telling me. You did it to sabotage me.
He pointed at Elisabetta, wounded. You betrayed me with my best friend. Good luck together. Marco turned away and flew down the stairs. Sandra went after him, but Marco bolted into the street. Marco, wait! Sandra hurried after him, noticing the neighbors coming to their windows. Leave me alone! Marco whirled around on the run. You can have her. I'm done with you both. Sandro stopped running. He knew that Marco was beyond reason when he was this emotional, for he had always been ruled by his heart. All of you Jews are liars, Marco yelled. Filthy liars! Sandro shuddered at the ugly words, echoing off the houses. His neighbors popped back into their houses, closing the shutters. He stood watching as Marco vanished into the darkness, his black uniform becoming night. Sandro turned around and went home to send Elisabetta away again. Chapter 59. Marco. 9th of June, 1940. Marco hurried through the ghetto, tears filling his eyes. His heart pounded, and his chest heaved. He was shaking with anger, stumbling over the cobblestones. He had never been so hurt. Elisabetta and Sandro were together. He had seen it for himself. A man walking by gave him wide berth, and Marco kept his head down. He had loved Elisabetta and Sandro both so much. He had trusted them both without question. Their betrayal stabbed like a blade. He raked his hair back, dazed and enraged. Wine clouded his head. He never should have shouted such insults. It was the only thing he regretted. He had wanted to hurt Sandro, as Sandro had hurt him. He hurried past the synagogue, wiping his eyes, then heard a commotion behind him. He turned around to see Carmine and Stefano, the Ovra officers, stepping out of the shadows on his very heels. Back in the ghetto, eh? Stefano clamped a hand on Marco's right shoulder, and Carmine clamped a hand on his left. Boy, keep walking. Marco felt a bolt of terror. The Ovra officers flanked him, marching him forward. They must have been following him. He didn't know what to do. They were armed, and he wasn't. He had been crazy to go to Sandro's. He had been drunk and angry and blinded by love. And now it would cost him. So, Marco, Carmine said under his breath, sounds like you finally wised up about the Jews.
It's about time.
Stefano hurried him forward. Where are we going? Marco masked his fear.
Palazzo Venezia. Bonaccorso wants you.
Why? Marco asked, surprised.
Tomorrow, Italy enters the war.
Part 4. È facile saper vivere. Grande saper morire. It is easy to know how to live. Heroic to know how to die. Arrigo Paladini. Chapter 60. Marco. 10th of June, 1940. Marco stood in the hallway behind a packed crowd of fascist officers, the cabinet, the Grand Council, and the staff filling the second floor of the Palazzo Venezia. Mussolini was about to give a speech from the balcony, declaring war on Great Britain and France. Marco's head spun with his turnabout in fortunes, which had flip-flopped in a single night. He was on the top of the heap, only the morning after he'd suffered the lowest of lows, catching his fiancée in the arms of his best friend. The betrayal made him sick to his stomach, but he hardened his heart. He vowed never to see either of them again. Marco had worked all night without a moment's sleep. He had been pressed into service fetching coffee, bottled water, food, telegrams, and whatever Buonaccorso and anybody else needed for today. Marco could scarcely believe that he was here on this momentous occasion. the gargantuan crowd on the Piazza Venezia was chanting so thunderously that it reverberated inside the building.
"Duce, Duce, Duce,"
they roared. The officers in front of Marco surged forward, and Marco watched from behind, trying to get a glimpse of Mussolini. War had been rumored for so long, and Marco had gotten a behind-the-scenes view of the hurried discussions, shouted phone calls, and officers with their heads bent together over maps and memoranda. Excitement coursed like an electrical charge throughout his body. He was embarking on a great adventure. And so was his country.
Duce, Duce, Duce.
The officers around Marco fell silent. And from the balcony came the sound of Il Duce being introduced. The crowd shouted so loudly in response that the officers covered their ears and turned to one another grinning, their eyes wide. The crowd kept roaring until at last the speech began.
"Fighters on the land, on the sea, and in the air," Mussolini shouted. "Black shirts of the revolution and the legions, men and women of Italy, of the Empire, and of the Kingdom of Albania, listen."
Marco stood spellbound as Mussolini continued to speak, his voice amplified by loudspeakers broadcasting the speech throughout Rome and every major Italian city.
"An hour that has been marked out by destiny is sounding in the sky above our fatherland. The hour of irrevocable decisions. The declaration of war has already been handed to the ambassadors of Great Britain and France."
"Marco," someone said behind him, and Marco turned to see Officer Di Filippo, a minor official. "Go to the communications room. There's an unsecured telegram for me. Bring it up."
"Yes, sir."
Marco threaded his way out of the room, into the hallway, and down the vast staircase to the sound of Mussolini's voice ricocheting off the marble walls. He reached the basement, went down the hall to the communications room, and entered the windowless square, lined with telegraph machines. There was no staff member in the room, although last night there had been an aged functionary who had given Marco all of the telegrams he requested since he himself couldn't read them. Marco went to the first machine, but there were no telegrams. He went to the next machine, but there were no telegrams there either. Same with the third machine. Marco assumed they were being collected by somebody, since last night there had been so many. He noticed a door in the far wall, crossed the room and opened it, startling a pretty secretary at her desk, typing as she ate pannacotta.
"Sir, oh my, may I help you?"
The secretary jumped to her pumps, then shifted in front of the pannacotta as if to hide the dessert.
"Yes, I was looking for a telegram to Officer Di Filippo." "Oh, I just pulled that one."
The secretary picked up a telegram and handed it to Marco, hastily wiping mascarpone from her lower lip.
"Thank you.
You don't have to hide your dessert